This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
The Commanders are preparing this offseason to protect star quarterback Jaden Daniels. How are you protecting your family's assets? The exclusive sponsor of our show is the law firm Condori & Murad. They'll help you draft your last will and testament, set up a trust for you and your family, schedule a free consultation with their attorneys right now at kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you for a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We'll take you up to 6:30 tonight. I do want to get into Darren Peng's comments last evening on TNT on Alex Ovechkin. He called him a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
And Caps fans didn't take too well to it, as you can imagine. But Penger was good enough to join the Junkies this morning.
And good for him.
To discuss said comment. I want to play that audio with you, Danny. We'll react to that coming up at 5:30 here on GND. But right now we're discussing Trey Hendrickson for the Commanders. I promise this is not an exercise on the show that we're going to do every time some big-name player becomes available. But if they are one of the better players in the league at a massive position of need where Washington unequivocally has to improve, hell yeah, we're going to talk about it. And here's why. You got the third most money in the NFL before you went out and added Deebo Samuel. You still have over $50 million to spend. There's going to be a lot of opportunity to upgrade this ball club. And while I'm on record saying I think they're going to try to order appetizers and not get the most expensive entree on the menu. If they were to make a Trey Hendrickson deal, which I'm advocating for, we got to recalibrate what this offseason is. Because before the league year will have started, that would mean that they went out and got Deebo at wide receiver at $18 million, and then Hendrickson, who they're going to have to pay $30 million a year on an extension to. That's big game hunting. That is going out, and you see the mooses walking along. Like, they are trying to do the damn thing. If they bring this guy in, Jordan Schultz is reporting that Washington is one of the teams being linked to Hendrickson if and when he became available in trade talks, and that happened today.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's intuitive. It makes sense. It's not just the non-report report of, you know which team would make sense, said this person on NFL Network and Washington's named.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
A team that is devoid of defensive ends on the roster other than Dorrance Armstrong, that can't rush the quarterback from the edge if Fowler's not brought back, 10.5 sack guy, that has a ton of money and is in a win-now mode with the quarterback on a rookie deal, which normally leads to urgency, and is coming off of an NFC title game. Why shouldn't they be linked to this player?
Totally. And the fact is, it's a, hey, this would make sense, and then we all do a news cycle where someone we're reacting to this would make sense as if it is news. This is an escalation above that, a.k.a. Washington has interest. And so now it's my curiosity has peaked, so to speak.
All right, so what's your answer to the question I fired off right before the break? And we'll get back to the phones in just a second. 800-636-1067. Line them up. You can tweet us, Instagram us, at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny, whatever you want to do. If they were to trade a two for him, which is what a team guide had sent me back. Let me just read this comment. I said, would a first be in play? I don't think a one is on the table. Got to give him 3 and 95 potentially after the fact, I assume. I think a 2 probably would be the top pick with some fluff, meaning extra pick, at least one other pick if it's decent.
A sweetener, yeah.
Or a couple of picks if they're lower rounds. So let's say it's a three-pick package led by a second rounder.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're paying them $30 million. But you wouldn't have pick 61 anymore in round two. That means they pick first round, third round, and then not again till probably like 238 and 250. They'd have four picks left potentially.
Yeah. I mean, it's not ideal, but again, what are we in the business of doing? What's the point of the draft? What's the point of free agency? What's the point of all of this? Is to, say with me, add talent. You're adding players that are going to help you. If this was a team that was going to win six games, which is the old Snyder way of doing things that everybody still references as if it's up to date, where they're not good and they're going, we're one player away, bring me Albert Haynesworth. We're one player away, bring me name that whoever. This is not that, okay? This is a different situation. They are a few players away. They went to the NFC title game with an under-talented roster in a lot of spots, with no young talent on it outside of the quarterback and maybe a couple other dudes that you can handpick that are sub-26 years old. That's because of the previous era. They're in a win-right-now era, so your paradigm of let's inch forward incrementally and go from four wins to 6.5, and maybe we'll get to 7 if we do it great, and then maybe we can be 9 in a wild-card team, wrong. Window's open. Sorry, Jaden Daniels is too good. Act accordingly.
My favorite thing about a Hendrickson move, number one, another sign, more evidence of what I talked about earlier in the week that I love, which is Peters is not scared. He is not afraid, man. Mm-hmm. He will put his neck on the line to go make a move, and he is willing to give things a try and throw some things against the wall to see what sticks, which I think is important as an executive, and I love that. Makes it more fun, but it gives you a chance to win big. I don't think you can win big being super conservative and playing your cards close to the chest all the time. But the other thing I would really like about it, Danny, if they were to go get Hendrickson kicking off the offseason here, is it would be a sign that they really understand they can't be what they were last year and repeat last year. And what I mean by that is their schedule is way harder. They will surprise nobody. You will get everybody's best shot. You're not a 4-win team they're playing anymore. You're a 14-win team. If they just line up and go play football with the same amount of talent on the roster this year, in my opinion, they're a little over 500, and hopefully you would squeak in as a wild card team. Hopefully. If they want to get back into the playoffs, I'm not even talking about the NFC title game.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to win a playoff game for a second straight year for the first time since the early 90s, then you'd better be a lot better on paper coming in than you were last year against the schedule you've got lined up this year. And I think they understand that, it seems like. Let's go to Zeke in Southeast D.C. on Grant and Danny. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Yeah, I think you definitely got to go after Henry, man. I don't care what it takes. Now, let me ask you guys a question. I think if you added up his sack totals for the last 2 years, he has more than our whole defensive line, correct?
I'd have to do the math, but I would say off the top of my head, yes.
Yeah, so my thing is we should at least be able to give up 2 draft picks for him. I'll do a first this year and whatever they want for next year, first, second, or third. I think he's the kind of guy that we need on our team, and that's definitely a position of need. And the other thing I wanted to say, because everybody keeps reference Peter saying we're going to build through the draft, but I never heard him say only through the draft. I think his whole position changed because we were one win away from the Super Bowl.
That's possible.
And it's something, that's part of it, yeah.
Maybe we need to dissect a little bit. But to be clear, he has not said they're going to build through the draft and through free agency. He has done what most general managers do. I don't know that I've ever heard of general manager, frankly.
We're going to be reckless and frivolous.
We're going to spend a lot of money and build through free agency. I don't think anybody says that, but he has made it very clear that he believes the best way to build this team is through the draft, that is going to be the priority. And pretty obviously, if you trade for Debo and then you trade for Hendrickson and you're down to potentially 4 draft picks, including one in the first, I guess 2 in that at that point in the first 6 rounds, then you're not prioritizing the draft this time, which is fine. I'm okay with it. I want Trey Hendrickson. You don't have to explain yourself to me, Adam Peters.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, don't keep saying that. Like, it is hypocritical to be a draft-first team and to act like the Rams bleep them picks from 4 years ago. Let's go to Andrew in Stafford. You could be Dre.
Hey, Dre.
What's up, Dre?
Hey, boys. How's it going?
Good, man.
You brought up the where we're picking in the draft, Grant, so I'm not going to touch on that. But as I'm thinking about it, this almost strikes me as like when the Nats brought in Worth, and that was sort of the sea change of like we're a real organization now. And I like, you know, he's really good. Go get him and then be smart about the next opportunities because he's expensive. So I like if you can balance it because Jaden is cheap now. So if you can spend money now, do it and stock on the draft the next 2 years for the future.
Appreciate you, dude. Yeah, I mean, so I have general rules about the rules isn't the right word, but guidelines, axioms, whatever you want to call it, about team building and roster building and sort of figuring stuff out. I guess the point I've always made, whether it's the NBA or whether it's Major League Baseball or otherwise, I mean, each sport has its own nuance. But my point is, in general, you want to have a good course of action that makes a lot of sense, that's prudent and smart and coherent, and each move sort of makes sense to either a corresponding move or a move in the future or something, right? Sometimes glass breaks. In other words, sometimes something happens that's so unexpected and so unusual that you kind of go, my plan was really good. There's nothing wrong with your plan of being patient, building through the draft, taking a couple years, figuring things out that way, and hoping to find your own Trey Hendrickson in a couple years by making the right picks and being judicious and building your roster, et cetera, et cetera. Other times, this is a way to improve right now, this minute, to kick the door down and have a window that's open for a couple years while I'm trying to beat the Eagles. I guess that's kind of my point here is I have general rules about how I'd like to build a team, and I still would like to do that. I'm still majoring in that. We're talking about two moves a lot. One has already happened, Deebo Samuel. The other is a potential in Trey Hendrickson. They're going to have 30 more transactions that are not sexy. They'll do a good job of those. They'll shoot a better percentage than any previous regime we've had here in a long time. We're talking about the big fish here simply because that's, you know, kind of what it takes. And that's your headline grab.
And this is a whale.
Yeah, but when you sign the next Nick Allegretti, that's going to be like, and they did this, but back to Trey Hendrickson. You know what I mean? They're still going to have a huge team-building opportunity where they're trying to find guys with this Washington tag.
Deebo Samuel was a big rockfish, let's say. I mean, this is a whale if you go get him. You know, you've got your little javelin you're throwing in Moby Dick style.
Yeah.
$30 million a year defensive end who was the runner-up in DPOY last year. I mean, I don't know how we would even find this. We could get our research department on this. But has a player who's finished in the top two in defensive player of the year, when was the last time one of those guys got traded the following season? It's got to have been a long, long time. It's just not that common that guys become available. And maybe there's one or two guys in the last 20 years that agitated and left. But this is not that. This is not a guy that wants out or is a pain in the ass or, you know, that they don't like dealing with. This is just a guy they're saying, we're not going to keep paying, which is absolutely lunacy to
me. We can't afford it.
To answer the caller's question, I did the math during that last phone call. So, yes, his 35 sacks the last 2 years are more than the Commanders' defensive line had this year, 28.5 total sacks. And over the last 2 years combined, their defensive line has had 57 sacks to Trey Hendrickson's 35 sacks. And that is combining the work of like 12 dudes, basically.
Last I can remember like this is Reggie White leaving Philadelphia to go to Green Bay, where he was a defensive player of the year candidate and all pro, either first or second team, and then he changed teams. But this, again, that's, you're talking about rarefied air. That's 30 some years.
Yeah, I was in diapers. Let's go to Rick in Germantown on Grant and Danny. How are you, Rick?
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. Sir. I'll do two twos and get it over with.
So you got no problem. We're saying a two and something else. You're saying if it takes this year and next year's two, and then you pay him $30 million, you're ready to do it.
Yep, because you're not giving up your ones.
Appreciate you. Yeah, I mean, it's nice to hang on to those for sure.
If you can, yeah.
And it would have taken at least one, if not both of those, probably in a Myles Garrett trade, I would imagine. By the way, would it be weird for Ryan Kerrigan to coach himself? Like a better version of himself?
Just a Spider-Man meme at practice?
Right.
Yeah.
Just like a all-American kid. Like, where do you want me to go, coach? Number 91, white defensive end, you know? Just Spider-Man memeing himself, watching himself play. I've always watched Trey Hendrickson and seen so much Ryan Kerrigan for obvious reasons, wearing the same number and obviously... their games kind of both power off the edge. But funny to me that He has supplanted Kerrigan. Seriously. Early in his career, for the first 3 years with the Saints, I don't want to say he was a nobody, but he was not a particularly productive player.
No, he was fine. Not a rotational piece. Yeah, and it wasn't until his fourth year that he had 13 and a half sacks and the whole league went, wait, what?
He skipped mid, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He went from backup, couple of rushes that'll impress you, month kind of guy, not that helpful, to, wow, that's a good edge we need to pay some money to. Pro Bowl caliber talent, like Kerrigan level. And now he's left that in the dust. I mean, now we're talking about an all-pro type. PJ and Reston, you're on Grant and Danny. How are you?
Hey, guys. So first thing I want to say is, if we just rewind a year ago and we just, like, thought we'd be in this situation, like, it's amazing. So something I'm doing, like, every single day is I'm not taking it for granted because, you know, I'm in my 40s and I've loved this team forever. And it's just amazing to even have this conversation.
That's right, yeah.
I think Adam Peterson is some kind of savant. I think he's the second most important addition, as much as I'm a huge Dan Quinn fan, after Jaden Daniels. This guy is unbelievable. I think he's going to get Troy Henderson. And Troy Henderson, I think it's worth, you know, if it's a second and a fourth, whatever it is, it's worth it because I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but he's at minimum a Hall of Fame talent. And if look, thankfully, nobody's calling and saying no, right? But if anyone were to call and say no, disrespectfully, I would ask them to think, like, okay, how rare is it to have, like, a Hall of Fame type talent edge rusher? And, you know, the only thing I would say is, you know, he reminds me the way he plays of Howie Long. I wonder if he can kind of get, like, a really tight jersey, like the way Howie Long wears, so, like, the guys can't hold him. I don't know why guys don't do that. But, yeah, I'm all in. Also, I'd like to see us even go and get, like, a Christian Kirk or Cooper Kupp if it's not too expensive.
Christian Kirk got traded today,
unfortunately. So he's going to Houston, but, yeah.
Seventh-round pick from the Texans to the Jaguars, so he's off the market.
But the point stands is you've got to add talent with all the mechanisms that you're given. Everybody starts with the same allotment, same number of draft picks, same number of salary cap space, right? And it's your job to figure out how to put together the best roster. In general, there's a path that is tried and true and makes sense. This is off the beaten path a little bit, but given where you are at the end of each round, because you went to the, to PJ's point, NFC Championship game in year one of all of this, you got to go different directions.
And that should change how they operate, by the way.
I think so, too.
I don't think it should become their identity, and I would not go all the way on the faders to, like, NFC Championship game mode, because you're not the Eagles, in my opinion. You know, you're not the Lions. I don't think you're there. I think you had a great year, and you played with them, and in the Detroit case, you beat them, obviously, when they were pretty banged up. But I think you can find a middle ground between acting as though you are building in a fringe playoff team, which you should be more aggressive than, and acting like anything less than getting to the Super Bowl is a mistake. I think meeting in the middle of those two, which is a pretty easy thing to do, I think is probably where they should be living. In case you're curious, if you're just hearing the show for the first time today and you're wondering why we're talking so much about Trey Hendrickson, you may know that he is available. As of today, he is seeking a trade. The Bengals are allowing him to do that. But the reason we're talking about him as a fit for Washington is actually this Jordan Schultz report. Schultz, who's been breaking as much news as anybody on the NFL beat this offseason, and fighting as many reporters as well as anybody.
Leads the league in both, yeah.
At Starbucks specifically, you better watch your back, Ian Rappaport, because he'll whoop your butt. That's what we heard about him.
Don't step to him in that line.
I heard he was a big guy, too. He's like 6 foot plus, maybe 6'2 or something.
Schultz is?
Yeah. Rap Sheet's a tiny little guy.
He's a little fella, yeah.
Darius, were you flying with me? Who got on the flight when Rap Sheet was on our flight?
Yeah, that was me.
How small was he?
Very, very short guy. Yes.
I mean, now I've known Rap Sheet for years, so I already knew this, but were you taken aback by that?
I was definitely surprised. Yeah, it was my first time seeing him in
person. He's a wee little guy.
And you know, Darius told the story that he actually got into the overhead bin just to see that he could. Is that what you said?
That is part of the story, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
First class, by the way, Rap Sheet.
He was definitely at the very front of the plane.
Yeah, I don't know if we even had a first class on that plane, but it was whatever the version was.
Yeah, there was definitely a curtain there that they could close.
That's true.
Would it have been okay if you used that bathroom?
I don't think so. There was first a curtain class closed between me and Darius and Ian Rappaport. Weirdly, Odyssey didn't have us sitting up there. I thought that was really odd.
I think there was a mistake somewhere. We probably should talk with the airline. Yeah, about that.
Yeah, we'll get with CK on that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not today, though, but maybe another day. The Falcons, like the Commanders, have also been monitoring the Trey Hendricks situation, according to Jordan Schultz. Atlanta makes a lot of sense, too, dude.
They should be, by the way, more desperate than Washington.
Let me see their cap situation.
I don't think it's good, if memory serves.
Well, the Kirk Cousins situation's not helping them financially. and it wouldn't be that beneficial.
Falcons are over the cap by, depends on where you look, $5 to $8 million. Over right now.
Yeah, by the way, they're third worst in the league in cap situation.
Mm-hmm.
Only the Saints and Bills. Now, the cap's not a real thing. It's kind of this amoeba that shifts all the time. And
still, the point is it's challenging.
Very challenging.
Yeah. If only there wasn't some giant contract for a guy that wasn't really going to play for them hanging over their heads.
So, Washington, really good cap situation.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta, really bad cap situation.
So, if you're comparing one really good, the other really bad?
Schultz said Commanders and Texans want Debo. The Texans have since been the only other team to trade for a receiver, and Washington got Debo. I'd say he was getting good information. Now he's saying the Falcons and the Commanders are the two teams he's heard that have been most monitoring the Hendrickson situation. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Double shot latte for Jordan?
You know what I wouldn't say?
Hmm.
Alex Ovechkin's a one-trick pony.
Here we go, let's go.
That's what Darren Peng said on TNT last night.
Let's do this.
Join the junkies to talk about it. Let's get into that next on The Fan.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
give Spencer Carver and his coaching staff an awful lot of credit. We all know that Alex Ovechkin's been a bit of a one-trick pony throughout his NHL career, but that has not been the case. And there's the normal spot. We saw that here on TNT. But how about this one? Right through the guts of the ice, right in the middle. Now he's again in the middle of the ice, fires that one. And how about this one in the last one? Right in the slot. And he picks it up, has strength on it. For Tampa Bay Lightning.
That was Darren Pang on TNT as they covered the Capitals yesterday. We'll get into his comments calling Alex Ovechkin a one-trick pony momentarily. I had thrown out there last segment that I wondered when the last time an all-pro who finished in the top two in DPOY voting changed teams in the offseason. It just doesn't seem like something that happens. These guys aren't made available. Toby Altizer, who heads our research department, got on it immediately, and he's got our answer. Toby?
Yeah, the answer is 1996, and Kevin Green went from the Carolina Panthers, where he was second in Defensive Player of the Year voting and first-team All-Pro. The next season, he was with the San Francisco 49ers.
So he had the Trey Hendrickson season. By the way, how many sacks did he have that year? Obviously a different guy, different role, but...
14 and a half.
Silly. Pretty he was similar. Such a good player. Hall of Famer,
that guy
man.
Was awesome.
I loved him in Pittsburgh. So he had 14 and a half sacks, probably led the NFL, I would think.
Yes.
And he gets second in DPOY, All-Pro, just like Hendrickson, and changes teams. But you said one of the times where it was close was actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah, so 2 years before he left, he was second Defensive Player of the Year voting. The year before he left, he was fourth in Defensive Player of the Year voting, and he signed a lucrative contract with the then Washington Redskins, Albert Haynesworth.
Sorry, a little bit in my mouth.
Albert Haynesworth, friends. Haven't said his name on the show in a while. Toby, there's a rule, man. You got to say earmuffs first. Then you can say whatever you
say
want.
Say whatever you want. Try to make a point. Don't celebrate it, Frank.
You can curse. Just tell us earmuffs Commanders fans. Saying Commanders still makes me. Even though I'm not you and
it's
I don't do
the thing. It's so cringeworthy.
For some reason, there are certain times when I say it, when I look at myself.
Hey, Commanders fans.
Like I look at, you know, a kid that in a pocket protector or something. I'm like, that's tough, man.
Point, Dexter.
Let's untuck those pants, huh?
Yikes.
Just use the earmuffs when you hear that name. All right, so Darren Pang called Alex Ovechkin a one-trick pony.
Sure did.
Capitals fans were really bothered. I heard it live, and I was upset. I was like, what in the heck did he just say? Did he just call him a one-trick pony? And I actually went back and rewound and listened to it again. What I thought he was suggesting, Danny, is, and he just keeps not saying this important phrase, on the power play, he stands in one spot, shoots from one spot, and scores one way 95% of the time for the last 12 years or whatever it is. They haven't really changed their power play. We jokingly call it Ovi's office. It's, you know where it is. It's in the circle at the faceoff dot on the left side. He gets the one-timers. He shoots, he scores, or he doesn't. Or it goes wide and rims around, and they got to go retrieve the puck and get it back into the offensive zone. But I think what he was referencing is when they're on the power play, they're moving him around. It's the first time they've done this in years. Occasionally, he never starts the power play anywhere else, but he'll skate to the top and switch with whoever's at the point. Carlson will come down to his office occasionally, and he'll go up to the point and play Carlson's role. They have him in front of the net when they rotate sometimes after going to retrieve a puck, and he'll try to bang home rebounds at a percentage in a clip that they have not done in years and years and years. So I think that's what Peng was trying to say, but he made the point very poorly because he never said the important phrase on the power play, and then they were showing videos of even strength goals. He's like, look at this, here in the slot, look at this, he's on the other side of the ice. That's not the power play. So I think it was just a convoluted point by him in the truck not being on the same page.
So I don't. And here's my rebuttal to what you're saying. That's a very gracious benefit of the doubt thing. And I don't have anything personal against Darren Pang. Seems like a very nice guy. When have you ever complimented someone and said they're a one-trick pony? When has that ever been a complimentary thing that you're talking about someone that's proficient at something? When has that ever been a positive connotation? To say, we're used to seeing him in the office, we're used to seeing him in one spot, but he's moving around. Again, that's very gracious because it wasn't a power play thing. The whole point is he's evolved his game. So if you're saying he's always been a one-trick pony, meaning, yeah, he does this one thing, and you know, I guess people kind of like that. There's no positive possible with that. It's diminishing. It's a way to lessen somebody or something. Like, if a pitcher has, like, Mariano, it'd be like calling Mariano Rivera. That's a one-trick pony because he just threw cutters. That's what that is. That's not a positive way to say it. To say Mariano Rivera was a one-trick pony, that diminishes it. He had the most dominant pitch maybe ever that he got outs for 20 years because his cutter was explosive and filthy and no one could hit it. No one could square it up. But if I was like, Mariano Rivera is a one-trick pony, but now watch this, he's throwing four seamers. That's not positive.
A one-trick pony, there is a negative connotation, and it is a pejorative. It's a cutdown. I see what you're saying. It is true, though, that he has done it one way on the power play for years and years and years. So do you have an issue if he was to have said, on the power play, Ovi's generally been a one-trick pony as the greatest goal scorer of all time with a man advantage from his office, and now they've gotten creative and moved him around, and it's really created new life?
Yeah, because it's one-trick pony. There's no way to say that and be like, two thumbs up. It's great. Like, it is a negative way.
I think it was just a phrase for saying,
yeah,
he was always in the same spot scoring the same way.
Sure, which is...
Are you okay with saying that?
That's far more positive than one-trick pony. Here's my bigger and larger point that I've been sitting on for weeks, okay? You saw this when the Capitals beat the crap out of the stupid Pittsburgh Penguins who can rot in hell. It's 2-2 into the second period. This is weeks ago when I was on Natty TV. 2-2 in the second period, and the Capitals, the best team in the NHL, with the greatest goal scorer in the history of this stupid game, running up the charts to catch your precious golden boy, Wayne Gretzky, who's the greatest player ever. Four goals in the second period for the Capitals. You know what the entire second intermission was about? When we come up after this, P.K. Subban's going to remove his glasses and tell you that Sidney Crosby had a protein bar today. What do they need to do for Crosby? Crosby, 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 Penguins and Crosby. They're not in the playoffs. They suck. We're great. They suck. The Caps just scored four goals, and the only thing those jackasses who represent what the NHL wants to put over is the Pittsburgh Penguins, their Canadian golden boy, and other Canadians, and they hope for more clutching and grabbing in the third. Back to you after this. They don't know what to do with themselves. That Alex Ovechkin is going to take this record from them, and they hate it. That's my belief. This is a Canadian league who's putting on TV programs for Canadians and then asking us to join them. Kiss my ass with that. Not you. You've done nothing wrong. I'm so annoyed about this. This is just a little window. Again, Darren Pang may be a nice guy. He's not part of some grand cabal or conspiracy. But I'm telling you, this entire saga has been so revealing to me that they don't know how to handle it properly. So there's a necessary diminishing of Ovechkin as not a well-rounded player, or just a reminder that other guys do it the way that we prefer it here in Canada, and more face washes and more fights and more checks and more really rough and tumble play. He's a one-trick pony. That was so revealing to me as to how they actually feel. So I'm livid about this because I think it's just another window into how I feel.
So I think there's actually a lot of truth to your theory, right? Even if I disagree with, like, the passion with which you're angry at Peng for what he said yesterday. Because, again, I think his point was poorly worded and or, he needed to say on the power play, mm-hmm. I know your issue is one-trick pony.
Right.
And we can kind of disagree a little bit there, although I agree it's a disrespectful way to say that the guy's the greatest of all time at something. But Peng is from Ontario. He is a Canadian NHL analyst who played in the NHL for, I don't think for long. I think it was like, you know, parts of 4 years or whatever. But has been a good media member covering this sport at a high level for a long time. I think there is absolutely something to the idea of it's a lot of Canadians that cover it. There is a kind of an unwritten underbelly rivalry between Canadian hockey and the European game. And I do think that, remember, Ovi was like the bad boy of the sport early on because yeah, he did the hot stick celebrations and he celebrated in ways that people didn't like and he burned the candle at both ends and he's got soda in the water bottle on the bench. And he was not embraced like Sidney Crosby or some of these other guys do that are from Canada. So yeah, that's true. Go back and watch a Mike Milbury intermission. After when NBC had the rights, and they were by far to me the worst when mm-hmm. it came to covering Ovechkin.
100%.
But Mike Milbury would point out his one turnover of the period that led to a chance in a period where he scored two goals and may not mention the goals as those are playing.
You can find the Don Cherries, the Milburys, yeah, all of that stuff.
Absolutely. The other thing I will mention about Peng last night, and this one's not getting talked about, but there was a comment he made that actually annoyed me way more than the one that you're bothered by. As they were going to overtime last night in 3-on-3, he referenced 3-on-3 overtime hockey and said, you know, Ovechkin's benefited from 3-on-3, as if, you know, 27 overtime goals, as if they've all been 3-on-3. Well, 3-on-3 didn't come along until 2015. The majority of his career was spent without it.
He's doing this for 20 years, pal.
He's got 15 goals 5-on-5 in overtime. He's got 12 goals 3-on-3, but I digress. But he said, what would Wayne Gretzky have done in 3-on-3 hockey?
Well, a lot, because he's the greatest player ever.
Of course.
But that's not relevant.
But it is relevant in this way.
Well, you know what I mean.
Kiss my ass with that take.
Yeah.
Because Wayne Gretzky played in an era where way more goals were scored. And it was way harder to defend and to stop pucks and to be a goalie while you were wearing tiny little pads and you're playing in a soccer net, essentially, with the amount of coverage that you didn't have as a goalie. So I have no time for or patience for anyone who's talking about empty net goals when it's pretty comparable between the two of them anyway, or 3-on-3 overtime goals. He's had 12 of them ever. He's going to blow past 12 past this record if he plays next year anyway. He plays in an area where it's harder to score, period. But this was Peng on the Junkies today when they asked him about his comment, One Trick Pony. They actually got him on this morning. He was at the airport, so kudos to the
Junkies. Good for him, seriously. Good for them, too.
And Drabby for tracking him down, and good on him for saying yes. But this was his explanation to calling him a one-trick pony.
Often in the past, just to clarify, we a lot of us analysts or everybody else talked about OV as just going to the one side, the hash marks, and in his office, and then setting up the one-timer, and often he was referred to. That's a one-trick pony, one guy that he gets the puck there, and he fires it, and he scores goals. But what I was alluding to last night was how impressed I was with how flexible he's been and that he's not scoring from that same area all the time. So anyway, I'm not sure if that even clarifies.
So was this kind of taken the wrong way? That's what you're saying.
I believe it absolutely was, 100%.
And didn't they play the clip, or do you have that? They played it for him? Because at one point in time, he was like, yeah, I don't know if I even called him that. And they're like, well, can we play you the audio?
Yeah, because you said it last pretty night? Clear as day.
He's trying to say I was complimenting him. Again, I actually understand completely what he was trying to say. Even then, it's clear he's talking about the power play. You didn't say the power play. You still haven't said the power play. Use those words. It'll get you out of jail here on this one. But he has not connected those dots yet. And they were showing even strength goals while he was talking about it.
See, to me, I need the phrase one-trick pony ripped right out and shot into the sun. I need the greatest shot of all time from his office. That's what he's known for. He's added this to his game. There's no way to take one-trick pony as anything but a knock. And now look what he's doing, regular NHL Canadian hockey stuff. That's exciting. It's so condescending. It's so dismissive.
It is condescending. I agree with that. But if you are using it as you're complimenting somebody's growth, I guess I don't have as big of a problem with it. It is the way he has scored on the power play for so many years.
He's not a 20-year-old kid. He's the greatest goal scorer ever to live. The part that's missing for me is the acknowledgement of the greatest shooter ever to walk on this planet, or the greatest shot ever, the most difficult shot to stop from the spot we know. One trick pony basically says, like, it's a gimmick. You know, he's throwing a spitball. He's Gaylord Perry. It makes it sound cheap and it's diminishing.
And maybe we don't have to argue about why what he said. Why he said it is I think what's important here. And we agree. It is a discrediting comment.
Yep.
Just like the 3-on-3 comment was. See, if he didn't make that one, I'd give him a little even more benefit of the doubt on the one-trick pony thing. But when you're going to overtime, and again you bring up Gretzky, what would Gretzky have done with 3-on-3 overtime? Shut up. What would Ovi have done with no goalie pads?
With half the guys without helmets on.
What would Ovi have done? I've seen the highlights. I can score goals in that sport in that year if I could skate. My fat ass would be scoring goals. Ovi would have scored 90 goals a season for 20 years in a row.
Nothing but odd man rushes out there out west. Come on,
not to mention, you know hockey, Darren Pang, better than I do. You know they haven't had 3-on-3 his whole career. 2015, man. Not even half of his career has been spent with 3-on-3 hockey. The majority of his overtime goals haven't been scored that way. He suggested, essentially, pretended like all 27 of the overtime goals were 3-on-3. Not a thing. Did you guys have a problem with the comment last night? And do you sense what Danny does, and I think he's onto something, that there is some discrediting going on, some condescension going on, because this isn't one of the Canadian golden boys of the NHL. Very Canadian media, generally speaking. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny.
Man, I would love to hear it because
all right, here it is.
I got tongue tied. That'd be great. Thanks.
Well, I give Spencer Carberry and his coaching staff an awful lot of credit. We all know that Alex Ovechkin's been a bit of a one-trick pony throughout his NHL career, but that has not been the case. And there's the normal spot. We saw that here on TNT.
All right, so you did follow up by saying
that has not been the case.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, because we get a lot of information talking to coaches, and you know, they without Backstrom and without Oshie, you know, and without Kuznetsov, where they had that one, they had that set play, and it was stubbornly great, that play on the power play. But times have changed, and I think that's why I gave Spencer credit. Like, it's not easy to tell a legendary player that we're not going to have you in that same spot every single time.
Darren Pang with the Junkies this morning explaining a comment that Caps fans did not take too well to. This is all part of a backdrop, too, of recent national coverage elevating. There's more and more games now as the local broadcast is not getting the rights to these games because the networks picked them all up thinking Ovi would be close to the record, and he is. By the way, we're probably going to watch Ovi get the record called on Turner or ESPN or something like that and not Joe Beninati and Monumental Sports with Craig Lachlan or Alan May in the booth. And that's going to be absolutely brutal if it's not Joe Beninati's traditional call. You know, it's going to crush Joe B. He's talked about it on our show.
Yeah, and us too.
But it's going to be a national network very likely calling this. And it's going to be awful because they take their pot shots and their condescending remarks. And there definitely is a little bit of a rivalry, long time unspoken thing between the style of play, European hockey, and North American hockey. And most of the media members we watch are Canadian, some are American. But even some of those guys, you know, over the years have been rubbed wrong by how some of the European players play and skate. But this is mostly a Canada thing with people like Pang, frankly, or Milbury, or whoever you want to cite or go to, these North American analysts who will take issue as often as they can with Alex Ovechkin. Milbury happens to be an American who is from, you know, Boston and had a
background. But raised in that school. Yeah, that's what
Islanders,
it is.
Bruins background. But you know it when you see it. It's one of these old, Sidney Crosby can't do anything wrong, Ovi can't do anything right kind of guys.
I'm at Funny Danny Grant's at Grant H. Paulson. Damon had a perfect tweet here. I'm going to read it. How would people react if Alex Ovechkin was exchanged with Steph Curry being a one-trick pony? Bet you people wouldn't be happy. Like, that's the point. You go, Steph Curry just hits threes, one-trick pony. There's no way to say it in a positive way, and then when have it confronted with it, go, yeah, but now he's hitting layups, so he's grown. Exactly. You mean one of the great point guards of all time, one of the great players ever to play this game, a guy that's going to have 16,000 points with his next one, a guy that's top 50, I think, in assists or close to it because he's been able to play at this level for this long. Like, come on, dude. It's just, look at this. He's getting after goals now. He's moving around the ice. It's so condescending.
I will let you get upset at that.
I'm all over it.
I am going to be upset at the audacity that Pang had to make the suggestion that Ovi has it easier when he talked about 3-on-3 overtime hockey, which accounts for 12 of his nearly 900 career goals. Give me a break. If you look at the numbers and goals per game from Gretzky's career, where it was closer to 4 goals per game, and Ovi's career, where it's been under 3 goals per game in the sport, there is no arguing who has had it harder, who it's more plays in an era where it's more difficult to score. It's not even close. You don't want to have that conversation if you're pro Gretzky, Darren Pang. I promise you. He also made this point today on the Junkies, which I thought was again, ridiculous. He went deeper into this idea of, like, offensive hockey getting easier now. Listen to this.
You know, the goal scoring's changed. I mean, let's face it. I mean, if you don't see, if people don't see that, it's then that's okay with me. But, I mean, I didn't grow up in an era where you get a, you know, you're on the power play and you get an offensive zone faceoff and you can pick either side or three on three or no red line. Those are just the facts of the game. But the game also changed from Gordie Howe to Wayne Gretzky to, you know, now to OB. So,
yeah, goal scoring has changed. You're right. It's down a bunch. It's harder to do than ever. So they've had to change some rules to try to get it even closer to the old era because there's less space and because goalies are better and because defensemen skate better and are bigger and more physical. Are you kidding me? The offensive zone faceoff is your big takeaway on the so he's got it better than Gretzky? I mean, that is just asinine. It really is. But this is all feeding from the same trough, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting ready for a lot of national calls here in lieu of Joe Beninati instead of our guy, including the night when the record's broken probably. Do you guys perceive what we do? We'll hit the phones hard next, wall to wall. 800-636-1067. Are you okay with the comment Peng made? Do you have any issue with the coverage of Ovechkin? Grant and Danny with you on the Fan.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.